We read in Psalm 27. We'll return there now. Psalm 27 verse 10 says that though my father and mother forsake me, the Lord will receive me. Though my father and mother forsake me, the Lord will receive me. On Sunday mornings at the moment, I'm looking at the lifespan of humans from conception to the grave. And we're just going through what the Bible has to say about different stages of life. We've looked at conception, we've looked at life in the womb, gestation, we've looked at the early years. And now we come to teenagers. For the benefit of all the teenagers in the church this afternoon, we come to teenagers. And of course you all understand teenagers and the way their minds work. Or maybe not. Teenager is a very recent phenomenon. I'm not just talking about young people who happen to be 13, 14, whatever, up to 19. I'm not just talking about that, but the actual creature we call teenager today. When people speak about teenagers, we know what they mean. He's a teenager. It is used as an explanation for all kinds of weird behavior, all kinds of behavior that isn't easily understood by people around. And when you come to the Bible, you find great difficulty in finding anything about the teenager. The Bible, of course, is full of wisdom for life and full of descriptions of people and of the way people behave. But actually, that creature we call teenager is almost absent from the Bible. I'm talking here about the young person who is growing up today, who may have questions that previous generations, young people, don't have, who may be a young woman or a young man asking the question, who am I? Someone trying to find where they belong. Someone trying to find their identity. Where do they fit? What kind of music should they be listening to? How should they dress? How should they behave? Where's their place? What purpose is there for them in life? What tribe do they belong to? What's cool and what's not? Trying to find out their identity. And maybe not feeling that they yet know what their identity is. And as a result of that confusion, perhaps behaving in ways that other people find difficult. Difficult to deal with and difficult to understand. When I was 17, I remember an occasion in my first year at university. I was having coffee with some of the other young people who were on my engineering course in the Boyd Orr building at Glasgow University. And I cannot remember much about what the particular conversation was. But in the course of that conversation, one of the other boys in the course, who was a great deal more mature than I was, looked at me and he said, Roddy, you're a misfit. You're a misfit. And I have to say that I can still feel the sting of those words today. I don't think he particularly was trying to hurt me, but he did. And I was certainly one of these of many teenagers who fell between the parts of verse 10 of Psalm 27. My father had certainly forsaken me. I had just walked out of my life without even saying goodbye when I was 13, and I didn't know the Lord, and I didn't know that he was there to receive me. So obviously my mother was about the only stabilizing influence in my life, but she wasn't there. She was 200 miles away. I was in Glasgow misbehaving. And I didn't know where I fitted in. And I think I was quite typical. I can think of many of the young people who were around me at that time, 30 years ago, and they were the same. They were lost, just as I was lost. They didn't really know who they were. And that kind of person is someone that you would find it hard to find in the Bible. The kind of person is saying, who am I? What should I be? How should I behave? What should I do with my life? Am I good enough? Am I someone that people like? Does anyone like me? Does anyone love me? Where do I fit? What's my group? What's my sexuality? Am I good looking enough? Now, a lot of teenagers just don't have those questions, and we'll see why in a minute. But many of them do. And many of them really struggle with who they are and try to work out what that person that they find them in, whose body they find themselves, is. So why doesn't the Bible describe this person? Well, last Sunday morning I was preaching in Drumna Drochid, and after preaching I had my lunch with a delightful couple who were telling me that both of them have families that stretch back centuries in Drumna Drochid. The wife, for example, said she'd gone back 8 generations in her family in Drumna Drochid. Her husband was something the same. In other words, they were families that had belonged in the glen, as they say, for a long, long time. And I thought that was really very unusual. I thought, you know, today, in this mobile society that we live in, it's not usual to find people who can do that anymore. Maybe there's still a bit of that up in the Highlands, but not much. And we find it very difficult to understand that. I mean, most people have moved around and don't live where they were brought up, and certainly don't live where their parents were brought up. But in the Bible, it just wasn't like that. In the Bible, it was very much like this couple in Drumna Drochid. In the Bible times, people lived where their parents and their grandparents, going back generations after generations, had lived. Like, this is a psalm of David. And David went on to have family, who had family in turn. And 1,000 years passed, and Joseph was still there from Bethlehem, where David had been brought up. A descendant of David. Of course, very important that Jesus, Mary was also a descendant of David. Very important that Jesus was born in Bethlehem. That was what was prophesied. But you see the kind of stability there was in society for that to happen. It's almost unimaginable for us today that people would be living for 1,000 years in the same place as past generations of their family. And so the family and the community were everything. The home and the family was absolutely central. It was central for play, it was central for telling stories, central for finding out about who you were and who your family was and what was the history of your place. It was central for education. It was central as the place of work, where people worked together. And it was central as the place of religion. Your companions in the past were your family. And in the Bible, that was certainly true. You didn't move around. So in your community, you were related to lots of people. And the young people, the teenagers, they spent their time with older people, as well as with their peers. And the result was that young people matured really early. They learned very early on how to deal with life and navigate the complexity of life. They learned how to relate to adults very quickly because they were with them all the time. They learned to respect adults. And they learned who they were. Like David, as we remember a few weeks ago, we were looking at Ruth and Boaz and Obed being conceived, remember? Obed, Ruth, Obed, Jesse, David. You know, David knew his genealogy. He knew who he was, where he'd come from. And of course, you learned to deal with the crisis. You learned how people dealt with crisis. You looked up and you saw how the older generations dealt with death, dealt with shortages, with economic crisis, dealt with war, dealt with all kinds of things that came their way. And in that environment as well, you worked. You shared the workload. You learned the value of things because you worked for them. And so you matured early. Jesus, for example, would have been brought up in a society like this, in Nazareth, of course, where by the age of 13, he was deemed to be a man. And his peers were too when they reached 13. Just like today in Jewish society, you do your bar mitzvah. If you're a boy, you become a son of the law. And you, instead of having your parents responsible for you, you become responsible before God for your own behavior. And you become a man. And in the legal sense, and in the religious sense, that's what you were at 13 in Jesus' day. So there was a law, for example, that you couldn't form a synagogue unless there were 10 men. Well, there could be 10 13-year-olds. And you could have a synagogue because 10 13-year-old boys were deemed to be men. 10 men. Just a few years down the line, by the time you were 18, you were probably going to get married around about 18. That may seem extremely early today, but that's what they did. Because by that time, you'd learned what maturity was. You'd learned how to deal with the things that life brought by observing the older people in the community and in your family. And you had also learned, if you were a boy, you'd learned your father's trade. And if you were a girl, you'd learned the role of the mother and of the woman in the family and in the home. And together you'd learned about providing for the family, agriculture, growing things, looking after livestock. You'd learned all these things so that you were able to take responsibility at 18 as husband and wife. Now you hear sometimes today people say, children grow up too quickly today. Well, actually, do they? They learn an awful lot of stuff that it'd be far better that they didn't know at an early age today. But they certainly don't mature as quickly as generations in the past did. And that's the problem. That's where the teenager comes in. Because in Jesus' day, or in David's day 1,000 years earlier, or even some of you probably remember a day when you were young, you didn't have time to be a teenager. And there was no need for you to ask the question, who am I? Because you knew very well who you were. You were your parents' children. You were a person with a very clear position and role in your family and community. And you had a deep sense of that rooted within you, so that you had a sense of your worth, of your place. And there was no insecurity involved in that. You were defined by your family, you were defined by your community, and you were expected to fulfill roles in perpetuating your family, like taking on the responsibility of the land and the buildings of the inheritance, looking after the material goods, the livestock of your family, and carrying on the work role, the trade or whatever, of your father if you're a boy. That was your place. That's why when we see Jesus, for example, in Matthew chapter 13, this is a little digression, but when Jesus goes back to Nazareth and he's now a man, a preacher, a teacher, a rabbi, a man doing miracles, and the people of Nazareth, they just can't comprehend this, because you see, Jesus should just be the carpenter, because that's what you did in the society. You grew up, you fulfilled the role of your father, and you took your place in the family home, especially as a firstborn, and which Jesus was, and you didn't deviate from that. But Jesus was deviating a long way from that. You know, we know this guy. They say he's the carpenter. We know his mother and father. We know his brothers. We know his sisters. So it says they were offended by him because he wasn't fulfilling his role, his settled role that was expected of him in society. But that was, of course, because he had a higher father and a higher role to fulfill. But in any case, I think what we're seeing already is that there is a reason why you don't find teenagers in the Bible. It's because the phase that we call teenager today has been created by conditions in society in recent decades. And it's the case often that older people just cannot understand younger people today, because when they were growing up as older people, when they were young, the society just didn't support the whole reality of a teenager. You were mature earlier and you knew what your role was and you fulfilled it. So think about many young people today. If they don't have this kind of family and community cohesion that was true in David's day and in Jesus' day, what do they have? Well, many teens, a horrendous number of teenagers, do not have a close family. And there will be, in many young people, an experience of family breakdown of one kind or another. So that what verse 10 says, maybe their father or their mother have forsaken them, and they find themselves less certain about who they are as a result of that. But even those parents that are still in the home with them probably aren't about most of the time, because they're out working, and maybe they're out entertaining as well, or being entertained. And then, whereas in the past, teenagers would join their parents at work, well, that doesn't happen, of course. The teenagers are home alone, or they're home with their friends. Now, their friends, the people that they spend the most time with, are not older people who can show them how to navigate life. They're people their own age, who may be equally immature and equally insecure. And also, whereas in the past, the teenager had a clear role in the home and family, no such role exists. And also, they may not even be living in the place where they were living in a year ago. Many teenagers are in families that move around quite a lot. And so they can't really get any sense of belonging to a community or of their family belonging to something bigger in the area they live in. Of course, cities have exacerbated this. In the past, most people lived in a rural setting. And today, they live mostly in an urban setting where there isn't just the same sense of community At the same time, there's far more wealth around. And so teenagers who in the past helped the economic circumstances of their family by working, they don't have to work. And in fact, there's money laid on for them, plenty of it. In most cases, parents probably sometimes because they're feeling a bit guilty that they're not spending time with their kids, give their kids stuff instead. And so the teens get it all laid on for free, and they don't learn the value of things. And at the same time, as all this is happening, where are they getting their principles from? Where are they getting their values from? Well, not from their parents or their grandparents, but from the people they spend most time with. And these are their peers, these are those they're in contact with on social media. Often, interest groups of one kind or another that may be spread across the world. TV shows and their values, websites, they can be accessing stuff that is really completely alien to their parents' culture and their parents' values. And they can be learning things that totally dissociate them from their parents, and the parents may not even be aware that this is happening. And so it's little wonder that there is a crisis, and what we call the teenager is a person in crisis, is a person who may in one sense or another be forsaken by their father and their mother. Maybe their father and mother are still about, but they're just not getting the time with them. And maybe every day they're only spending mere seconds of quality time with their parents. And they haven't therefore got a sense of belonging. And at the same time, as all this happens, they don't know the Lord, as verse 10 says, the Lord will receive me. Well, David had that, but many teens, most teens, probably don't have that. So it's a really difficult time for young people. And like I say, some young people just bypass the teenage angst and difficulty by being still in secure family environments and still relating well to older people and still respecting them and learning values and learning a sense of who they are in such a way as to avoid all this angst. But most teenagers probably now have this kind of crisis experience. And it leads to them doing things that are quite difficult for others who don't have this kind of confusion in their minds to understand. It leads them to experiment. They experiment with lifestyles and they experiment with substances. And it leads them to feel a lot of pain. And they vent that pain in different ways. And sometimes they suffer with mental illness. They self-harm. And sometimes it's all very tragic and all very difficult. And all very terrible. The closest individual I could find to a teenager in the Bible that I could think of, and maybe you can suggest some others, was in Proverbs chapter 7. In Proverbs 7 there's a lad who's called a lad who lacked judgment, Solomon says. He lacks judgment. And he's the kind of lad who doesn't seem to have a home to go to, as it were. He doesn't seem to have the kind of security. And maybe he's a lad whose father and mother just aren't on the scene for whatever reason. And so he's very much an exception to his peers. And this lad in Proverbs 7, if you read it, you'll find, what does he do? Well, he ends up trying to find out who he is, and he ends up lingering around the house of the prostitute. And Solomon describes it in graphic detail. Until at the end of the description it says, with persuasive words she led him astray, she seduced him with her smooth talk. All at once he followed her like an ox going down to the slaughter, little knowing it will cost him his life. That's an extreme description perhaps of just where the kind of alienation, the kind of confusion that teenage young people often experience can lead them. It can cost them their lives. But it doesn't need to be like that. And let's try and finish on a positive note. teenagers can gain maturity, they can gain self-worth and a healthy sense of who they are with two things. And they're both there in verse 10. First of all, they need their father and mother not to forsake them. They need a strong family. And if you recognise this, you can do something about it. Of course, it's ideally developed when before you reach teenage years, when children are just very young. They should be spending a lot of time with their parents if they can. If the situation permits it, their parents spend a lot of time passing on who they are and what their family is and so on, the rules, and giving guidance and creating a close family, so that when the teenage years come, the teens are close to their parents and can speak to their parents and can bring their worries to their parents. And their parents are also strong, can give them guidance, can give them boundaries, and can give them purpose, can give them work, can give them rewards for their work and so on. And, you know, trying to develop the kind of closeness of family that secured people like David and Jesus and generations past in a way that is not present generally today. When the family is eroded, the teenager arises, the person who doesn't know who he or she is and is lacking a sense of self and a sense of worth and a sense of identity. And in a pressurized society such as our own, when there's a lot going on, this is something that parents and grandparents, anyone that can fulfill the role of mentoring young people, can fulfill. Youth leaders, we all need to take our responsibility in whatever way we can towards the teenagers of our community. Because what we want them to have in our community is a place where they fit. We don't want them to be misfits. We want them to know who they are. And we want them to have a sense of their value and their worth. And to grow up with a real sense of place, sense of where they come from, and a sense of recognising how good it is to be their parents' children, their grandparents, grandchildren, and so on. But also, there's the last bit of verse 10. There is nothing our young people need more today than Jesus Christ. That's the bottom line. And David, as a young man writing the psalm, knows the Lord. He knows the Lord. And it is his ultimate confidence. So he can write in the psalm in a way that, you know, I often stagger at the psalm. I often read it and I think, wow. You know, verse 1, the Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? Well, I think, well, there's a few folk out there I might be afraid of. But he says, I'm not afraid of anyone. It says, even if an army, verse 3, besieges me, my heart will not fear. The war break out against me, even then will I be confident. Why? Well, because the one thing I want is just to dwell in the house of the Lord, verse 4. To gaze in his beauty. God is everything to me. He's my mother and father. He's the one who looks after me and receives me and gathers me, as the word is literally. Gathers me when all else fails. He's the one to whom I can turn. I will see his goodness, verse 13, in the land of the living. And finally, his advice to us all, wait for the Lord. Wait for the Lord. See, verses 1 to 13 is about David and his relationship with the Lord. But then he says, turns to the audience, as it were, and turns to you and me, and he says, wait for the Lord. Be strong and take heart and wait for the Lord. You know, it's God that is the one you need. He's the one you need to turn to. And this is his final advice to other young people like himself. Wait for the Lord. Though your father and mother forsake you, the Lord will receive you. And today in our own community, we are greatly privileged to see a number of different churches and different groups working with young people to help them to find the Lord. And we are seeing young people becoming Christians as well, and their lives being changed and transformed, and then getting a sense of worth and identity and of who they are through Jesus Christ. So we need to pray for that, and we need to pray that God will work through our Sunday schools and our youth groups and our Bible classes and our youth fellowships, and through all the different things that are happening in the different churches, and through Dave's work as well in the high school particularly. We need to pray for those who are trying to gather young people to Jesus, that these young people who often don't know who they are in other contexts will know who they are in the context of being the children of the living God and having a Father in heaven whom they can call on for salvation and help in their daily lives.